guess we can roll the tape. My name is Dorothy Bass, and I've entitled this session, The Changing Lives of Women and the Changing Life of the Church. And this is a nice group. I hope we can all talk together about this. It's a matter of, I assume, personal concern to most of us, certainly to me, and personal concern, and yet clearly it's also the fact that women's lives are changing so much is something which is going to reshape the church in certain ways, right? And I'm hoping that we can discuss how that is happening and how it should happen, whether, you know, what, how the church might be reshaped as women's lives are changing. It seems to me that throughout history, God has sent challenges to the church that forced the church to rethink its mission and its form. And God often sends these challenges in the form of changes in society, which the church then has to come to grips with, and which we have to figure out the relevance of the gospel to. And in the last 25 years, clearly one of the major changes that's going to reshape the church and make us rethink things is the changes, are the changes that are taking place in the lives of women. Okay? Now, my assumption is that those changes have begun in the realm of society and culture. Okay? That things, you know, objective changes in the society, changes in the economy, in politics, in even medicine, have contributed to the situation in which families are different, women are different, expectations are different. And so I thought we would start by just kind of brainstorming about what you see as the social, economic, medical, political changes in the society and in the culture that are having so much impact on the lives of women. Is that a clear question? What's been going on for the last 25 years? What's changed? What's birth. Changing?
Birth.
Birth. What about it?
In the way it's managed in hospitals.
Can you be more...
Well, for an example is the cesarean rate is skyrocketing.
So
that... Say that again.
Cesarean rate is skyrocketing.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
How do you account for that?
In some places, it's over 50% of the births in a hospital are cesarean.
Well, it's interesting because what I thought you were going to say is that there's also more of an ideology that women should be actively involved in this, which would
I
be
I think that's the result of... I think there's a reclaiming of birth because of this.
I think the increase in cesarean births has been at the convenience of the doctor and not necessarily at the request of the mother.
Right. But also on career, a lot of young women who want to be able to predict their time, leave from a career. So that has happened, I'd say. Because actually, medically, it's not a good
It takes a lot
idea.
Longer to heal.
Yeah, it's not good malpractice-wise sometimes. Although malpractice is pushed.
Supporting cesarean.
Yeah, because if you have a damaged baby,
that's right.
It's almost the end of your ability to practice as an obstetrician if you're sued.
Yeah.
Among my friends, I'm finding the natural birth.
Yeah.
Being very, what they want.
Right. But it's a realm. It's interesting. I taught the same session, or I led the same session last Saturday, and this didn't come up at all. So it's interesting. But it is a very symbolic area about do women have control or not, in what way, you know, what are the social and economic forces contending for power, and even in that very intimate part of our lives. Others, which is, let's make this a quick brainstorm. The
more
women-headed
families,
okay.
Women and as a result, more poverty being more woman's province than ever before.
Okay, great.
More female poverty.
Poverty is something that happens to women and children increasingly in the society and around the world. Okay, it is. There are in the United States. 18% of white families are headed by a single female. More than half of black families are headed by a single female. And of those families, it's 15 to 20% receive some child support.
From the spouse.
From the spouse.
Right.
Okay. So that's why there are women and children in poverty. Okay. Maybe we can add here the wage differentials for women. Okay, women in the workforce clearly would be something we would need to add here. And women, on the average, make 70% of what men do. If you look at just, I mean, that's, you know, that's like drowning in a lake that was 6 inches deep.
I thought it was even more than that some years ago. It was 59 cents a pound.
Right.
It was about 62 cents.
You know, that's interesting. Let's say that's not great either way, right?
Yeah.
Or I just read this in a new book, you know, very new, reliable, scholarly book, The 70%. I was surprised it was so high. But let's say it's somewhere in there. And it is going up a little. Okay. But, and it's largely, partly there's a differential, for instance, if you look at professors, you know, all male professors at any given rank make more than, I mean, the average is more than women. But the really major reasons is the segregation of the workforce into women's jobs and men's jobs. Okay. So that, you know, clerical workers, for instance, are, you know, a lot of women in the workforce are sitting at word processors now. And they don't make as much as
the sanitation
construction workers.
Workers
or sanitation workers or others. That are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think the division among women actually is one of the changes too. There are more women against women.
Uh-huh.
It's not a sisterhood. It's not you know, we're all women trying to encourage the lot of other women. It's the stay-at-homes who say, I'm being persecuted for staying at home, versus the women, and you know, and the others are doing it because they want two Mercedes.
Uh-huh.
Versus the others that say, you know, I have to do this to get bread on the table because my husband isn't bringing
mm-hmm.
in any money, or
mm-hmm.
he's got a health problem, or there
he's
isn't
not here.
One.
Right.
He's not here, and I don't get any support.
Mm-hmm.
Or the fact that I have some talents that I can offer society.
Yeah.
It's more they're trying to put me down, and then and because they're putting me down, I'll put them down.
Mm-hmm.
And we lose support.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What do you does this fit your experience?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I think pro-life
mm-hmm.
versus you know,
pro-choice.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different issues that
divide. Uh-huh. There's a women's the question of gender is at the forefront of people's reflections on politics. And, or many people. I mean, the question of gender is on the common table, isn't it, as we think about the meaning of lives. And there's not just one answer. I mean, it's a contested issue. Now, my belief as a historian is that there have always been women who chafed. I mean, in times of consensus, in times of apparent consensus and silence on the issue, there was still always a turmoil in the souls and lives of many people over the issue, but it's really now very much out as a public issue to be debated in a society which is divided on a lot of things, and gender as a political issue is one of those. And there are different factions.
Back to the workforce again, there are many more professions open to women and many more women in those professions.
Okay. Yeah, opening of some of many fields. And perhaps also, therefore, a wider range, girls may grow up with a wider range of options, whether or not they can actualize them. Their imaginations may be more wide. Keep going. Anything else you want to mention?
The whole problem of health care coverage, I think, really impacts women.
Uh-huh.
Because the most underinsured group is children.
Mm-hmm.
And women are most, and I'm Hampshire women too. And it's a real accelerating.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, I think when historians look back on what's been happening in our generation here, that the turning point, if you just look at the long sweep of women's history, a real clear turning point is the availability of birth control. You know, and the people who are doing these things are the ones who have realized, I mean, not all women have learned to practice this or wish to, and wish to control that, but it's really a major change in the ability of women to shape their own lives.
Well, my understanding is that birth control began to come into being in this country now around the 1830s or something like that. Of course, it hasn't come into wide acceptance, you may say, until more recent years.
Right. That's true, and you can look historically. People have been limiting their families forever, one way or another. Okay, but when you can see the birth rate go up and down at different points, but the pill and the wide acceptance of it, I mean, the legalization. My mother tells me about going over the state line in the 1950s to, you know, to get a diaphragm or something, you know, which just wasn't possible, not permitted in certain states.
In Massachusetts, contraception wasn't legal until in the 70s. Less than 20 years ago. It was such a Roman Catholic state.
Yeah, no, that's helpful.
Something I've experienced as a young mother is that was different, is not having a family, extended family.
Right, that's interesting, yeah. Right. Lots of pressures on the nuclear family. More pressures on the nuclear family as a result, right?
This has been said in other words yet, you know, already, but there's, I think, a significant backlash against feminist issues and women getting uppity and so on. We've talked about that already.
Yeah.
Women against women and the politics of all of that, The Handmaid's Tale and all of that.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true. Interesting. You know, when you add a lot of this up...
Inclusive language and worship and stuff like that.
Well, we're going to do the church next, okay? But inclusive language even in business or in newspapers, you know, is interesting. The English language is beginning to change.
Which brings in sexual harassment, which wasn't part of our language very long ago.
Right. And that's real helpful to think. The certain strains between the sexes, which have always been there, and violence and deprivation, which has always been part of human history, I think, has been named and surfaced. And that makes it's a painful time for this reason. On the other hand, it's more truthful to name sexual harassment than not.
And it's also more open to litigation, a lot of these issues.
Right, okay.
It's bringing it into the courts.
Mm-hmm. Right. The law, when the laws change, society changes. Or when society changes, the laws change. That's helpful. Litigation about sexual harassment. But also, one of the changes of the 60s was the civil rights movement. Just a broad-based movement of incorporating more people into... or an effort, at least, to incorporate more people into lots of institutions of American life. This gets stymied at certain points, but this is part of the ideology of our age, too. In law and rights. Rights are on the book in some ways, not the ERA, but many other legislation. Let me put naming the violence, if that's okay, for things like rape crisis centers and domestic abuse hotlines in almost every town. You know, at least where I've been. If they're in Indiana, they must be everywhere.
In Massachusetts.
Yeah, Massachusetts has come a long way, I think. Okay, this is good. And when you add all this up, one thing you can see in the aggregate, again, there's no real average woman, but that the life cycle of women has changed. Okay, historians like to think about life cycles. that in the 19th century, when the to get to the church, when the forms of parish life that most parishes find comfortable were devised, the life cycle of a woman might the childbearing years might extend over 15 years, right? 15, 20 years. Marriage would take place early, after 6 children, spread out over 20 years, 6 surviving children perhaps. The woman would be older, not in particularly good health, and not necessarily ready to go out and do something else. Today, even women who choose to stay home often have the physical and energy and desire to go out after they've raised their children. The aging of the female population, partly extended life expectancy and so on. And most of the women I know who are 65 are in great, really have a lot of energy and may not be earning wages, but have a lot of energy and ability. So that the aging and the changes in the life cycle are kind of a way to sum up some of this. Let me see if there's anything else. Few little facts I wrote down here I'll add. Of course, but it's coming out as we speak. You can't speak of women all together. And there are lots of different kinds of women with different kinds of experiences. But I do think that many of these objective changes in the society have an impact, perhaps in different ways, on different classes and races of women, but do have a wide impact. In 1986, a survey showed that women were still doing 84% of the housework. Okay, that women who worked outside the home still did an average of 30 hours a week work inside the home. That 50% of the women with children under the age of 3 were in the workforce, which shows how deep that, how far-ranging this change is. And that only 7% of the American families were traditional families. Okay, meaning man works, wife home, children home. Okay. Only 7%. That seems like something that we want the church to take account of. Okay, now let's brainstorm without lingering too much, although it may be hard, on changes that you have seen in the church in recent years. Okay, however you want to define that.
Ordination of women.
Okay, ordination of women. Anybody remember when that took place in the 1970, in both the ALC and the LCA.
But before that, in many of the Reformed traditions,
uh-huh.
Is that true?
I am an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ, okay, which came out of the Congregational Church, the old New England Puritan Church. Our first woman was ordained in 1853, and she had gone to seminary. I mean, there are other traditions where simply standing up and preaching with the Spirit gets you marked as a minister. Now, if we don't count those, this would be the first of the ones that required seminary and so on. 1853, but you look at 1920, there are only 100 women ministers in the denomination. It's not like that's one reason I think that social change is as important as change within the church in bringing lots of women into leadership, because it took other changes in women's lives for women to really pursue ordination in a large number, even where it was open. 1956 is Presbyterian and Methodist, which are very important. Episcopal would be 1974 or 6, depending on how you want to count it. Okay, so those are mainline churches that require a similar kind of training to what the Lutheran Church would require. Let's point out, though, that in most Christian communities around the world, women are still not ordained. Okay. In most Christian communities around the world, you want to name a few?
Roman Catholic and Orthodox.
Okay, Roman Catholic and Orthodox. And in this country,
Southern Baptist,
there are few. That's hotly contested. There may be 20 Southern Baptist women who'll tell you they're ordained, but headquarters doesn't recognize them.
Missouri Synod
Lutheran Church. And in fact, in the current politicking within that denomination, as the more conservative group continues to go after the more liberal group, the ordination of women is one of the issues. And it's one of the major markers that the Missouri Synod puts between itself and the ELCA. One of the reasons that they claim that altar and pulpit fellowship are not possible. So we need to remember it's still not an easy matter. In 1987, in the ELCA, there were, it was 1988, 975 women clergy ordained. That's far less than 10% of the ordained clergy. I mean, there are more clergy than that. There are more clergy than 10,000 in the ELCA. In the seminaries of the church, however, now about almost half of the seminarians are women. Is that your experience?
My class was 40%, and our class, our student president was a woman.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is anybody here a clergywoman or a seminarian? Can speak about this? No.
I'm the mother of a seminarian.
Oh, okay. Of a woman seminarian?
Woman seminarian, yes.
And what seminary is she in? Is it Lutheran?
Pacific
Lutheran?
No, I can't say. In St. Paul, which is
Lutheran Northwestern.
Thank you, I couldn't
hear. I heard an ELCA bishop predict that by the year 2000, the Lutheran ministry would be a woman's profession. Chiefly because congregations could get away paying them less.
I don't know the percentages, but I got this distinct impression that there were more women planning on getting degrees after seminary, going on for doctorates than for masters.
Okay, now this is interesting. Okay, women are going to seminary. But it probably is still true that if you looked at the graduates, more of the men are going to go into parish ministry. Is that?
No,
would
not
that be?
So much. No, I don't even sure if the. I think. I don't know how it's going to break mm-hmm. down, but I did see a lot of serious attitude about studying.
That's okay.
I've got friends in seminary, and it's very hard for the women to find parishes.
Mm-hmm.
So because of economics, they go into other areas of ministry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This often happens. There are more women in what we call specialized ministries, hospital chaplaincies, prison chaplaincies, teaching, campus ministry, and so on, because of resistance still in the local church. We can pursue, we'll come back to this, but think of some other changes in the life of the church that you have seen. And we'll see how,
inclusive language in worship.
Okay, inclusive language. Does everyone know what that means? We're going to abandon using only male references for God and for humankind. Mix our images.
More women in parish governance.
Good, okay. Even that's an issue in some of the conservative churches.
Mm.
The vote.
Before
even the governance.
Yeah.
Right.
Missouri Synod, I don't think, allows women on church councils.
Right.
Some,
it depends.
I think some congregations.
It depends.
One is the head of the building committee.
Great!
Contrary to polity at the national level.
Yes, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, yes, this is true.
Voting in the Missouri Church is still determined by voting within the congregation whether they will allow women to vote.
Right.
And the congregation which my brother and his wife still belong. Women are not allowed to vote yet.
Mm-hmm. This is, we,
and we're right. In the, I was mm-hmm. leaving the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's right. That's right. Not even having the vote.
Uh-huh.
Well, one area that ought to consider, that churches don't see, any church, I don't care what denomination it is, don't seem to be taking any concern or interest in, has to do with women. Yes, because my understanding is that if women who are going to be mothers someday are well prepared for that role of motherhood long before they, even before they become actual mothers, they will be far better mothers, and the children themselves will be better, literally. But we seem to ignore that. And yet, the studies, observations, not research yet, a little new, but studies have shown that there's a substantial influence, substantial beneficial effect on children who have, whose mothers have gone through training, et cetera, having to do with preparing them for motherhood.
Okay, can I take that in a historical direction? Take your church's women's organization. Okay. Historically, those originated as maternal associations in the early 19th century, okay, in the United States, and were first seen as the role of mother was kind of discovered as something that could, as women were leaving the farm and didn't have to weave their own cloth anymore and make their own candles and so on, the role of mother was expanding to include a lot more nurturing, teaching, spiritual guidance and so on than had been possible under a pre-industrial system. And groups of mothers formed to talk about their spiritual responsibilities. Okay? This kind of grew and grew and grew and changed agenda through the years to the point of women's organizations in the churches. Okay? Women's organizations as a place where women had a sense, it goes back to Kathy's point, do women have a sense of common interest anymore, or are they divided? But women's organizations as a place where church members with a common interest in both the sense of the things that I would like to talk about and interest in the sense of how am I going to get my power issues dealt with. The women's organizations have historically been a place where both of those things were addressed. And the things that women cared about could be discussed, and where a power base with its own pocket, okay, its own checkbook, its own paid leadership, who were women, who were very impressive people, who got leadership training, okay, its own agenda of education, so that the women in the church were often much better educated about missions, and the issues facing the church, and Bible study, and all kinds of things than the men, because they sort of had this, their own realm within which to pursue being the Christian life in a collective way. Okay, now, and this is, at least through the 19th century, I think probably on until the 60s, this has just been, you know, the major way that women have made a distinctive impact in churches. How are the women's organizations doing in your parishes now?
Aging.
Okay. Anything else? Are they...
Percentages of involvement is much less.
Okay.
They certainly don't deal with child-rearing interests. They certainly don't deal with child-rearing interests, and that's hardly ever a topic that's talked about.
Okay.
They may have to deal more with who's going to clean the church or make the coffee or send the next...
My impression is they don't have nearly the numbers of the strength that they used to have.
That's correct. Yeah. Uh-huh.
To address that, I'm fine. I'm a single parent, and I work 8 to 5, and a lot of the programs for women offered at my church are held 2 in the afternoon,
uh-huh.
10 in the morning.
Okay.
And if you're going to participate, you better be married to somebody rich who, you know, that you don't have to go to work to
mm-hmm.
make ends meet for your family. And
uh-huh.
you're one of the very lucky few who can participate.
Mm-hmm. My church, they finally did change it to the evening But if you're in that situation, you may not want to go out and spend Thursday evening either.
Well, that's just it.
You know?
Or they don't provide child care.
Right, uh-huh. Or they don't provide child care. You want to be involved in your church and in what you can do. And it's very, very difficult. Your time is so taxed.
Uh-huh.
The one outlet I have in my church is choir.
Are being impacted by all of this, aren't they?
Yes.
At least for in my life they are. I think that this is being studied now, but I'm pretty sure it could be demonstrated in a statistical way that volunteering and even participation, even attendance, in many families who are not super super committed to getting to church, that it's awful tempting to, you know, when you've been running around with all the other changes all week, to stay home, sleep in, do the laundry.
I think oftentimes now where women's groups are really flourishing, it's because they have learned how to use those groups as support groups. Mm-hmm. Support uh-huh. groups for single parents, support groups for people who've been through divorce.
That's very helpful. And probably those, my reading of history would be that that's always been true. But the issues that women need support on change, you know, that there's been a supportive element in for those who became very involved, and that now to keep the support part going, that's helpful.
What's happening to the volunteering aspect of everything is that the older people and the retirees are being asked to do an enormous amount of volunteering that younger people used to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that volunteer force is aging. Fortunately, it's also a little more energetic than it was a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
But
uh-huh.
That's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And in some churches, we're paying for things that people used to volunteer to do.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
Other, let's see. I sometimes feel on this, even though I'm a minister in the United Church of Christ, there is no congregation of that church in our town, and we go to a small ELCA congregation where I just act as a mom. You know, I have no special leadership at all. I do things like I've been the nursery coordinator, and I, you know, taught vacation Bible school and do all the things that women have probably volunteered to do over the years. But this is a real problem there, and here I should be sitting down as one of you saying this, but just expectations like that you need to bring a casserole every time there's some kind of a church event, or you know, when you've been working and dealing with children and all this, or the idea that nobody will volunteer in the nursery except the nursery parents, you know, so that it's a babysitting co-op for people who are already stretched pretty thin. You know, these kinds of things, which might not have been a problem in a more leisurely time, or in the 50s when I think women really were, with young children, were eager to get out of their home, you know, and go to church and do all these things. They were lonely in the home. And we're eager to go out and be really involved, that some of this now, with our lives changing, it becomes very difficult. And so such the church almost adds to the problem. You feel guilty if you can't volunteer to teach Sunday school, or guilty if you can't be the parent who helps here, there, and the other place. Because the church, the life of the church, has not yet changed in ways that are compatible with this.
People mm-hmm. say the church makes them feel guilty. Do they really mean the minister makes them feel guilty? I mean, because they are the church. I mean,
yes, yeah.
It's, or whatever the leadership
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
We make ourselves feel
yeah.
guilty.
Right. Yeah. It's an internalized image of parish yeah. life, isn't it? Yeah. It's an internalized image of what it, or for me, anyway, of what it might mean to be, to raise children in the church.
Although I think the leadership can tend to, there'll be calls mm-hmm. for volunteers and they get more and more desperate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think there is that aspect, because parish life hasn't changed enough,
mm-hmm.
that just the way things are couched, it is guilt-producing, even if you're pretty good at distancing. Figuring well,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a couple of other changes that I see here. One would be changes in the minister's family. You say the minister, the role of the minister's wife, okay, which has been a very I want to say respect. I don't know if it's always gotten the respect that it deserved, but has been a very major contributor to the life of congregations. I mean, you know, such that older couples will often speak of the call as coming to us, you know, when they go to take a parish. Yes?
Yeah, sure.
You don't like the word older. You don't like the word older. I don't hear that happening in my generation.
I think it's my wife comes from a more conservative church, and in her church, they're very divided. It's a different culture, but the pastor's wife is expected to do especially a lot of counseling for the women, to be the specialist for women,
mm-hmm.
You know, and so she's a very busy person.
Yeah.
You know, he's the guy that stands up front and does the sermons.
Right.
But she does a lot of the wheeling. She picks up, does a lot of the wheeling and dealing, especially among the women in the congregation.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Right. This is the model of the missionary couple, for instance, you know, over the years, and has been the model in many congregations. And great contributions have been made. It's harder and harder now for, I think, for couples to choose to arrange their lives in that way, even if they would wish to. But this is something that's going to change. And how, you know, and what about the minister's husband? This is a new role, which really many are worried. You know, friends who are in clergy couples or where the wife is the minister, things are real. They really have to figure out new expectations. What does that mean?
Especially if you play the organ.
They say that if you're married, a woman minister who's married to a really good tenor, you know, has a good chance, a better chance of placement. And the other thing is different, somewhat more abstract than this, although is really having an impact in the seminaries especially, is a very explicit orientation of theological scholarship, biblical studies, theology, church history, to change our conception of the Christian faith in other ways. I mean, we know a lot more now about women in the Bible, for instance, than was known 20 years ago. Women in church history. There's theological reflection proceeding, too. So there's those changes, I think, will take longer to work their way through to the churches. But ultimately, if some of that rethinking is carried out in a positive way, perhaps then the church would be able to give leadership as well as figure out how to respond to some of these issues. So maybe put down theology and Bible changes. Well, we're starting. What I really, this is fascinating. What I'm really hoping we can do is reflect together on positive models or dreams of ways that churches could respond more positively to the situation. Or maybe you're in a church which is responding positively. No, but how can the church be a place that is supportive for women who are living in this way, for families? It really becomes an issue for men and women. When families are involved.
One of the things we found is that this is a society of choices, and that to compete, the church needs to be a church of choices. So we've added, for example, a Saturday evening worship service, which is shorter than Sunday morning, and that's where our families tend to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's great for the kids. And then the families can choose to study together on Sunday morning and not have a long morning, but a short morning and a short and that choice worked. And the other thing we're doing is offering childcare for just about any adult offering.
Offering what?
We're paying for childcare. We're hiring childcare providers.
From the congregation or outside the congregation?
Both, whoever wants to do it. Mm-hmm. And there's a user fee, like $1 per family, per event, for childcare.
That would be difficult, of course. That excludes some, I would think.
That excludes some? $1 per family per 2 hours with 3 children?
Yeah. Sounds great.
I mean, you're right, it might, and we say that scholarships are available, which still could exclude people, but geez, hardly anyone can get that kind of child care anyplace else.
We cried out, and we found that we came there, and the person who was able to sit with him didn't show up.
It's a big job to make sure.
And therefore, at that time, I was new in the church, but I decided I'd take a nursery over myself. And I had it for 10 years, and then I was retired.
You want another place?
No, I'm not even on the clock. Right now. Instead of 8:30.
Any other ideas?
My guess is that most congregations haven't yet begun to come to terms with all of this. There are still 19th century parishes in a very changed 20th century world.
Mm-hmm.
A couple things. One, I know our parish has started things like job sharing on Sunday school teachers, so
okay.
that
uh-huh.
two people have mm-hmm. the Sunday school class, so you
mm-hmm.
the most you have is every other week, and you have a ready-made person to change with, and I think that's helped a little. We still have shortages of... And I think the other thing I thought of when this other woman here was talking about being in the choir, I know that I more and more am choosing a volunteer position that meets my needs and gives me energy back rather
uh-huh.
than taking. And so I think you have to look, maybe the church needs to look at the volunteer opportunities that really give something to people rather than just take. Because choir gives you something. You go to choir practice and you leave energized rather than drained.
Uh-huh.
So I've said, okay, that's what I'm going to do, and I know it's selfish, but I'm more willing to do that or do church and society committee
mm-hmm.
than I am doing something else I'm less good at
uh-huh.
and doing it just out of altruism.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe to look at all the volunteer jobs and really analyze them, whether they're giving something to people,
mm-hmm.
and if they aren't, maybe figuring out how to do alternatives, like we now have paid nursery staff, because we just found what you were saying was
mm-hmm.
so tough that it was
mm-hmm.
hard to ask families. It was basically the families themselves
yeah.
doing it, and they were having to do more of what they were really exhausted doing.
Yeah.
So now we have paid nursery staff
uh-huh.
so that families maybe within the church get something back
uh-huh.
rather than volunteering, and what
mm-hmm.
they don't get something back from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We are at least aware, I mean, it doesn't always come up, inclusiveness on like council. When you know, it's time for nominations, like, you know, there's some women going off, we really
uh-huh.
need to try very hard. I mean,
uh-huh.
now it's probably a third women.
Uh-huh.
Which is
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I think there's good evidence that what you said about the social changes, bringing about changes in the church, has happened in the church I belong to. I don't remember us ever at a annual meeting or a parish meeting talking about getting more women onto the church council. But for the last years, it's an unusual council that hasn't been at least half women.
Uh-huh.
And that's come because of social change, I think, more than because of deliberate
uh-huh.
change.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
I come from Britain, and just to hear you sort of, I mean, even doubting the lengths that you've gone to. I mean, our national church,
uh-huh.
who doesn't ordain women, and
mm-hmm.
yet, as a nation, has a woman queen and a woman prime minister.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I mean, the alienation and confusion that young women growing up who can see the lengths that the nation's gone to other things in politics and careers and things, but
uh-huh.
not in the church.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the church is seen as the sort of the old.
The old male faction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're very, very lucky to have what you've got.
Thank you for that. It's always good to get a cross-cultural perspective. You know, the Episcopal Church in the United States ordained a woman bishop this year. When was it? Last fall, I guess. And you know, just you know, grand ceremony. I heard. And now people are saying, "Okay, let me read a here's a quotation." Feminist theology would challenge the ethics of a woman bishop if she exercised power like male bishops have through domination. Okay, how do we expect, this is a way to open a slightly different topic, but how can, will women change the church in other ways, not just restructuring the volunteer opportunities, but, for instance, if half of the clergy should become female, you know, what would be changing?
Everything would change.
Everything.
I'm not so sure.
And should it? No, well, and should it? All right.
The perspective is different. The way you view the world is different as a woman than the way you view the world as a man, and you act on different assumptions.
Margaret Thatcher. I think you don't assume that because one of the discouraging things is how women in power have been molded by the male system.
Yeah, right. They just become men.
You see, I'm not sure. I think eventually, but it's real scary to me to see many of the women in leadership positions in our country. I don't think there are any. They aren't putting
any different.
They aren't putting female principles into practice yet in many places where the. You know, maybe in the count. You know, in the. Uh-huh. Human services field. I run a small agency and we have a very consensus model with 5 or 6 people, but the bigger it gets, the harder it is to fight the old hierarchical.
Good old boys.
Well, just what we're used to doing when we manage people in our system.
And the
I can remember, it must have been 10 years ago at least, listening to one of these pundits on TV. After the 6:30 news or whatever, was it Eric Severi, one of those guys, commenting on the week's events where Golda Meir had done some outrage in Israel and Margaret Thatcher had done some outrage in England and Indira Gandhi had invaded Goa and smashed a popular rebellion and so on. And he was reflecting that just because women are now, these women at least, were in positions of leadership did not necessarily mean a kinder and gentler world. Uh-huh. And just because Eastern, you know, we must not necessarily defer to Eastern philosophies as being more spiritual or less rapacious than Western philosophy. I thought he had a point well taken.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's hope one of these days it might make a difference, but
a
lot of women have simply become masculinized when they enter that world.
Well, it's hard. It's very hard then to be among the first women and to have all these burdens, plus then the burden of trying to be a good, nurturing, you know, non-hierarchical presence. But increasingly now, if you think about, say, the women going to seminary now, they're living in a coeducational environment. I mean, they're not just like, they're not having a career like Margaret Thatcher would have had where she was the only one. You know, and I hope there is some, I perceive that there is some strength in numbers, some ability to not lose one's bearings completely to an alien way of thinking. Ruth?
I'm still thinking this out for myself, but I hope that somehow in the changes that come about, we can keep the options open for supporting a variety of kinds of leadership among
mm-hmm.
women.
Mm-hmm.
In the synod I come from, we have a background of women leadership, women giving Bible studies, leadership seminars, a whole variety of things. And there were a good many women who participated and participated well. in the last few years, almost no one is ever asked to do many of those things unless she is a clergy person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm concerned that we not let our lay women leadership sort of be shut out while we encourage, as we should be doing, the clergy person's support.
No, that's a very perceptive comment.
Yeah. I'm also concerned that as women do become more and more numerous in positions of authority, that it doesn't become a threat to men. I think it often is, and we have to find some way of helping them to accept us. They back down.
Dan, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something probably primarily us men are going to be responsible for, but we are affected, like when someone says, good old boy system. I mean, I find that offensive. I'm
so
male, and I'm all of a sudden, I mean, I can understand what from historically, women have viewed men as being in this very group, and our main goal in life is to subdue someone, you know, but
yeah.
It's also, it, you know, it's not, it always feels like I have to be proving, you know, that I don't wish that women were groveling at my feet, you know, especially, I don't know, maybe it's going to happen more, and I think I don't get that so much with the women that I went to school with, because there we were more equals, I think. But for women who have been in a system where it's more separated.
Right. So that's helpful. And maybe can we see if you accept this framing of it, is that this movement of women in the church could provide men of goodwill with opportunities to express parts of themselves which they have not previously been able to, or would extend an invitation to men to be in partnership.
I think some of the alternative work styles, and this is broader, more societal, but I think what you see in some of the professions, that some of the alternative work styles that have been hard won by women sometimes to say, okay, I'll take, and lots of times it's taking less money in order to do a more flexible work. I think there are more men looking at that and saying, you know, there's value to that. There's value to being able to have more time with my family or more time to do something besides work. So I think over the long haul it may, for individuals, humanize work. I don't see a big rush to do that because they still, but I think for individual men, there are developing options, and maybe with it, maybe for pastors, as some female clergy start saying, well, I would like to develop this kind of a ministry, it may provide an alternative in how ministry is provided by men or women.
I think male ministers and their families are also growing sensitive to the kinds of demands and expectations that are brought by many congregations, right? The expectations of total round-the-clock availability and care are impacting men clergy also, and having some alternative models on the scene might help. Isn't this whole area of dealing with the stresses that people feel in their lives as a result of all these changes and so many families with less time and so on, that it's kind of the topic of the forum the other evening from a different perspective. We had a forum on work on Thursday night. The question of whether the church might not be a place where we could drop some of the pretenses about being the successful professional on the upward ladder and be with, as clergy or lay people, and be with each other and try to sort out what really is important. You know, how much richer do we really need to get? How many more books do we really need to publish, or whatever the particular challenge is in our own field, whatever it is, the thing that goads you and keeps you from being a spiritual person, a centered kind of Christian in your own life.
But women are competing in a male world.
Mm-hmm. And so you have to publish.
Yes, yeah.
And you have to do all the things that, that men have set up to sort themselves out. There doesn't seem to be a separate way that women are going. They are entering a man's world, whether well, they like it or not, in order to just economically.
Well, this is true many, you know, in many ways. But, you know, after you've got tenure, after you're at the associate, after your law partner, you really, I think that there then also has to be an internal compass that guides one through a lot of these choices. And there are some necessities, but there also are some choices, I think, yeah.
In the most prophetic sense of the church, I think personally, one of the things that if you really start thinking about success in the male world or in our society, it really runs very counter mm-hmm. to the first will be last and the last will be
yeah.
first.
Yeah.
So in the most radical Christian sense, I know in the last few years one of the things that my husband and I have been struggling with is, does he need to be president
yes.
of the clinic he works
right.
at? And he's still struggling with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world to mm-hmm. do that, but does it make sense from Christian? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's real easy within whatever career track you are to think, okay, it'd be nice to be alumni of the year from your school. But in order to do that, there's a certain track you follow, or it'd be nice to be on the top of.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do that, there's a lot of things that come with that, and a lot of things you turn aside, and a lot of time you take.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in the most radical way, the Christian faith can say, hey, if you pick that track, that may make sense from the world's perspective,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't necessarily make sense in Christ's economy.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I think that can be one of the most radicalizing and changing things that actually goes to get, is freeing for the new family
uh-huh.
that says,
uh-huh.
hey, we can't all be working for that and survive as a family.
Right.
And also, in a way, you're more in line with what Christ's message is.
Uh-huh.
That you, what really matters is the love you show. What really matters is the service you provide.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways that's antithetical to achieving a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
It can be just, and it, in a way it's a help. It's
uh-huh.
a, well, it is, I think it's the basic uh-huh. help. As you become more centered in some ways,
mm-hmm.
it and so that's the message of the church that
mm-hmm.
really can
Yeah, that's help.
Help.
That's very helpful. And the drivenness that's built into most jobs can be tempered or critiqued from a Christian point of view.
And it doesn't work, you know, 100%. It's
right.
a constant struggle, but
right.
I think it does sometimes
right.
help when you get another. Well, a lot of things that are offered in a career are
mm-hmm.
perks that tweak your prestige or your feelings of.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you really look at them, what they're accomplishing.
Right.
It's taking away from service, or
uh-huh.
it's just
uh-huh.
and it's time.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I know of two families in our church where the husband is the primary child care taker at home, but both of these husbands have their own professions. One's a teacher,
uh-huh.
and but at this particular time have chosen to do that. Though
uh-huh.
for some reason the wife
uh-huh.
is able to provide more, and. I would say probably at first there would be were a few questions like, oh, you don't work, you know,
mm-hmm.
that type of thing. But now, I would say everyone's very accepting of that arrangement. Both
mm-hmm.
these fathers helped out with Bible school, not
uh-huh.
you know, not every day, but were there,
uh-huh.
our child caregiver. And I think it's very acceptable in our particular area at this
uh-huh.
time.
Uh-huh. That's
which
interesting.
Wouldn't have been a few years ago.
At least it seems it would be exciting if the church can be a place where people can be very honest in dealing with these matters and not be a place where you go and are even expected to be fancier than usual, you know, more successful than usual, which happens in some congregations, I think, which have not broken through some of the barriers of communication.
I would say both those families have chosen simpler lifestyles because of
uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that you can feel good about not having
right.
redecorated mm-hmm. with your church colleagues rather than feel bad about that. people with children are going to have to get to your setting. Thanks very much. A lot of good ideas here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.